Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, happy Monday, you guys. I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. You are listening to Jake and Stacy. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacy Ross, DJ Wilder on the board. Jake, did you have a good Mother's Day weekend? Happy Mother's Day weekend to everyone, by the way. Hope everyone got to enjoy it.
Yes. Yeah, hope everybody got to enjoy it. I had a great Mother's Day weekend, Stacy. It was a good weekend. And, you know, we got to celebrate Brooke yesterday for all that she does for our family. Got to celebrate my mom and all the moms in my life, my mother-in-law and my sister and sister-in-laws and all that. It was a fantastic Aww. Day. So really, really enjoyed it. Jackson was excited to make breakfast with me on yesterday. But unfortunately, when I went to go wake him up, he said, Dad, you got it. I'm going to sleep. That's literally what he said to me. Saturday night, he told me,
I believe in you.
He told me to wake him up so he can make breakfast with me, for her. And by the time it came down to it, he's already a four-nager. So, you know, he's all about that sleep these days, Stacy.
Look, I completely relate with the way Jackson feels, only instead of making breakfast for my mom, it's instead working out. But me and Jackson have the same mentality there of like, absolutely. The night before, we were like, let's do this. It's awesome. We are ready. And then the next day at 7 a.m., we're like, we are not ready. I take it back. You've got this. Now, I also had a great Mother's Day weekend, although my mother is in Arizona, but I did call her to say happy Mother's Day.
It's the first weekend she's I know. The first Mother's Day away from you.
I'm
right?
Sad.
Like that's a big deal.
Yes, my parents have moved to Arizona, first Mother's Day away from her my entire life. Now, I did give her a call, Jake, and this is going to make you jealous. I didn't give her a call until 1:30 p.m. And she was like, where the heck is my Mother's Day call earlier? And I said, I'm so sorry. I woke up at 1 p.m. I
hate you so much.
I'm sorry. To all
what
the parents
I would kill
out there,
to be able
I'm
to just
sorry.
Sleep in till 1 p.m. Wow. Wow,
I accidentally Stacey. Took an Advil PM. It wasn't a mistake. It was a wonderful sleep, But Jake, you know, I wasted my Saturday. Was awake for like 6 hours, but you didn't. You were out
yes.
at Cheney Stadium taking in a Rainiers
correct.
Game.
That's correct. The Heaps. We were unofficial scouts for the Mariners. Jerry DePoto asked me to go out there and scout. The AAA club and Jared Kelnick in particular. And I said, you know what? Sounds like a great idea. So, Cheney Stadium is about 10 minutes away from my house. So we went and drove down there, me and the fam, and we went down and had a great night at the ballpark. It was the first baseball game, live sporting event that I've been to since the pandemic. It was awesome to be able to get out there and to be able to, you know, experience the sight and the sounds, and it was awesome. And it was great to be able to get out there with Jackson and Bodie and watching the games and being able to point out Jared Kelnick to Jackson. His two favorite players, Stacy, after the game is Jared Kelnick, number one.
Uh-huh.
And number two, it's Jose Godet. You just love saying the name. So those are his two favorite players.
That's his guy.
but I'll tell you what, as I was watching the game, I was really impressed with Kelnick's approach at the plate. I was really impressed with just the patience that he had, the confidence that he had. I watched him at five at-bats. He had two hits, one walk, and five plate appearances, and he didn't chase one bad ball. I mean, let's be honest. Everybody there at Cheney Stadium, maybe there's a couple season ticket holders that just love going to the AAA games, but for the most part, everybody's there to watch Kelnick. Everybody's there to see him as a minor leaguer, you know, knowing that he's going to be called up to the big league club here very, very soon. And he was out there playing within himself and not trying to chase any pitches, not trying to necessarily put on a show, just went out there and let the game come to him. And I was really, really impressed watching him handle everything and going out there and playing like the potential superstar that he is.
Jake, two separate people on the Mac and Jack's text line, by the way, 710-710, saying they saw you there, which makes me jealous.
Yeah, and not to mention, not to brag or anything, but
oh,
I got
wow.
to play... I got to play the famous fifth inning this or that game at Cheney Stadium,
what?
Which was awesome.
Oh,
oh yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I was up on the Jumbotron with Jackson.
Oh, come on.
It was amazing.
Oh,
yes.
Well, you
yes.
know what? It is good news. Not only awesome that people saw you out there and it was fun to probably like interact with people, but also it's good news for Mariners fans because we're at a place right now with the Mariners where despite their record, I think they're still 18-17, still just above 500, despite every offensive metric that would tell you they're below that. I mean, it is not a club right now whose stats back up their record or back up being above 500. That being said, they've still managed to do it in part because of having a great bullpen, in part because of a great season so far. Certainly toward the beginning of the season, toward April, by Haniger, Seager, and France. France down a little bit, though. But I think that if you're looking for things to be excited about for the Mariners, looking at those prospects, Jake, hearing that report from you is one of those things, right? But
yeah.
I think I look at and now I'm not being pessimistic. You know me. I'm not a pessimistic person. I'm not a negative
person. No, not at all.
Not at all. But I liken it to a train going down. Hear me out. A train going down the tracks at a slight decline. So imagine that the train is just kind of naturally going down the tracks. I imagined that adding Kelnick, you add weight to that, it goes faster. Add Gilbert, add a little more weight, it goes even faster. You know what I mean? I imagined that the train would be going and that adding all these guys would continue to add on, continue to make it a contender, continue to really, really get it rolling. What I worry it feels like now, what it does feel like now, is that it's just still. And that adding that weight on isn't enough. Adding Kelnick isn't enough to get you going because the idea was that he would be in addition, not like your entire momentum. And so I'm very excited about these prospects. But I am, for the first time, starting to wonder, you know, when are we going to see more from some of the other pieces already up here? Evan White kind of at the forefront of my mind, but there's some other guys here that need to pick it up too.
No, there's no doubt about that. And going on that metaphor, I think that one of the biggest aspects about this was that this year, if you're looking at it from a big picture standpoint, everybody can say development. Yes, that's part of it. But for me, as I was heading into this year, my mindset was, okay, we are going to witness the foundation of this ball club. We are going to start to witness the foundation getting put together, and you can start to see how this house is getting put together with that foundation, and then you get to add the fun pieces to it. Then you get to put the, you know, the framing up and the roof, and then you get to put the interior in, right? And that's what these other prospects are supposed to be. The Kelnicks, the Julio Rodriguez, the Logan Gilberts, right? Cal Raleigh. Those guys are supposed to be additions to the foundation to where you can turn your ball club from a you know, tear down to the studs to a winning, contending type of ball club. And right now, it's no time to panic. It's early on in the season. But if you're looking at the major league club, and particularly this last series against the Rangers, it was a tough watch. It was a tough watch to see them lose such a nail biter at the end. Yeah, Kyle Lewis, you know, getting called out at home, but more so Luis Torrens, right? That was one of the more boneheaded plays I had seen in quite some time, just being totally unaware of the situation and what was going on around him at home plate. I mean, that's the difference between winning this series and not, potentially, right? And then they go out and get massacred yesterday with all sorts of
errors
and, you know, Justice Sheffield, his control and his command, he just got smoked yesterday. But overall, if you're looking at that aspect of it, you're right. The train is slowing down.
Yeah.
Ty France isn't hitting the cover off the ball anymore. Mitch Haniger is slowed down. We haven't seen Kyle Lewis really get going yet this season. And there are some highlights to the season, but it to me, you're looking at this foundation right now here at May 10th, and you're not loving how the foundation is getting settled in yet. There's still a long ways to go, and we'll see how it happens. But I would have loved to have been able to look at the foundation and be able to say, man, I feel really confident that this is the foundation for the future. Now let's add Kelnick. Now let's add these stars. Because when you talk about the farm system, Stacey, who had a great weekend? Oh, man, the future stars of your team had an amazing weekend. Jared Kelnick recording 8 hits, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs. Julio Rodriguez, 7 hits, including 2 doubles, a triple, 3 RBIs, 3 walks, getting on base. Logan Gilbert having an unbelievable debut, Stacey. 5 innings, 4 strikeouts, 0 walks, 1 earned run. You go down the list. I mean, it was a very positive weekend for your farm system.
Yeah, and it again, really positive weekend, really exciting. You just need to see more from the guys in the bigs. I think you will. Like, I genuinely think that you will. And we're going to have Aaron Goldsmith joining us at noon. Mike Salk going to join us at 11:30, just before that. We're going to talk to both of these guys about where this club is right now, how they get right. And I will start by saying, and this is what we're going to talk with Mike about, that offense around the league is down, that batting average is down, strikeout rate is up. Those metrics are all a little bit low for several teams around the league. That said, the Mariners still hovering well into the bottom third in quite a few of those categories, whether it's slugging, on-base percentage, OP, I mean, whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a good, those are good metaphors, the train metaphor, the foundation metaphor. It wasn't supposed to be one guy fixing it. It wasn't supposed to be Kelnick coming
Correct.
In to fix you. It was supposed to be Kelnick coming in to take you a little further. Kelnick coming in to make it fun, to make you start to feel like, oh, now we're really getting
yes.
going.
And, yes.
And that's not how it feels right now. And that's got to change. And I think that, you know, there was a while when a lot of what the Mariners were doing felt really optimistic to a lot of people because no one had failed yet. And the reality is, in a rebuild, first of all, in any series of draft classes, but in a rebuild, not every guy's going to work out. That would be in an astronomical level of success for drafting and free agent acquisitions and trade acquisitions. The hope is that the majority of them do. As of, let's say, earlier this year, anything was possible. Any one of these guys could work out because no one had failed yet. What you're starting to see is some red flags offensively from Evan White, from you know, I don't want to say Haniger, Seager, or France. They've all been great, even though France in the last 15 is, I think, 9 of 57. I think that he can still be a great part of this. But you're starting to see some consistent struggles. Not like dips, consistent struggles. Those all feel fixable. Again, we're
right.
going to talk to Aaron Goldsmith about this. But Jake, that's really what I keep going back to.
No, I think it's very fair. And when you talk about the foundation, Stacey, you talk about the foundation being set. Part of that is the consistency factor. And you said Seager. Do we believe that Kyle Seager is going to be a part of this? Is going to be a part of the future? I don't know. I have my doubts about that. Not that I don't want to see Seager a part of the future. He's one of the only consistent pieces of your lineup right now, hitting at 242, but has been an RBI machine and has had his fair share of big-time games this season. But Kyle Seager is not going to be a part of the Mariners' future. I don't believe that that's going to be the case. Mitch Haniger, is he going to be a mainstay of the future? I don't know about that, right? And so some of these other names, like Ty France, whose bat's cooled off considerably, I'm not down on him by any stretch. You're going to hopefully see him bounce back and come from this valley and go back to the
yep.
peak, go back to the mountaintop, and hopefully stay there a while. But those are things that you have. It's a great reminder that a lot of these players, even a guy like Ty France, who we were all confident in and excited about the way that he swings the bat and hits the ball, that he is still a young player in this league and has a lot of growing up to do. And so you look at Ty France, Evan White, Kyle Lewis, I would even go to the pitching, Justice Sheffield. Who are the guys that are stepping up right now that you can say legitimately are the foundation for this big league club that are going to be there, and everybody else, every other talented player in this farm system that is doing their part and looking the part and developing nicely, that they're coming in and adding to it, not having to start the new foundation right there where it's set. I think that that's the biggest key and the biggest question. That's something that, Stacey, I am watching closely throughout this entire season.
Look, and if you want to end on a positive note, if you're like, I don't want to feel down on this club right now, Jake, that metaphor is a perfect one to end it on. The Mariners right now, the group that's in the bigs right now, don't have to be a playoff divisional winning type team. They've just got to be a foundation. Just get to that foundation level. All right. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. It's 11:15. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
The NFL schedule releases this Wednesday, which, by the way, we're doing a little bit of a competition here at the station. Listen later on the show, and we'll tell you a little more about that. But of all the Seahawks home games in 2021, which one intrigues you guys the most?
I would say the one that intrigues me the most is going to be, there's so many good games. But I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say the one that intrigues me the most is actually against the Jags. You're going to see see the first overall quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, and you're going to go up against Urban Meyer, who had a similar path to what Pete Carroll had. And then, to top it all off, it is filled with Seahawks coaches, right? And Seahawks players as well. Carlos Hyde, who was just here. Shaquille Griffin, who was obviously here for the last, you know, four seasons. And then you've got Daryl Bevel and Brian Schottenheimer, who are directing the offense. I mean, there's so much familiarity there that it turns into a really interesting game. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
In order, because Jake and I differ on when we think Trey Lance will start. If Trey Lance was a week one guy, the 49ers might take that number one spot. I'm hesitant to say he would be, although I kind of hope Jake is right because it makes for more interesting season. So in order, it goes Rams. Very curious to see what they look like with Matt Stafford. That defense already having been the best defense in the league last year, but now without that defensive coordinator, what are they going to look like? Most intrigued to see what the Rams look like this year. Behind that, though, guys, Bears. Why is no one talking about Justin Fields being potentially like the quarterback of the future for the Bears? Not only that, but a trade not happening with Seattle being the domino effect that eventually led to them getting Fields. I am so fascinated to know what that team is going to look like. Do I think they're going to be a serious playoff contender? I think they're still a couple pieces away, but I am fascinated to know what Justin Fields is going to look like in Chicago. I'm going Bears.
Number two.
The Mariners' bullpen day went sideways on Saturday, but the M's intend to stay married to the six-man rotation with the bullpen going every 6 days, even as LJ Newsome goes to the 10-day IL. So I just have a really short question here.
This feels like a passionate question.
Where is Logan Gilbert?
Very objective question.
Well, DJ, as they have done with Jared Kelnick and as they will go with Logan Gilbert, as they will tell you and as I'm sure Scott Service would say to us on a Tuesday and maybe
this on the way.
Coming up tomorrow, they are not going to sacrifice the development of their pitching staff, of their young, talented pitchers, for anybody, for anything. And they are committed to the development of that process. Also, what they are committed to is the development of players like Jared Kelnick, Logan Gilbert, everybody else in their farm system. You should not be bringing up Logan Gilbert to satisfy the needs of your big league club if Logan Gilbert is not ready to go or if he has not fulfilled the plan yet. I am fully on board with that. If you're adjusting your plan to what is happening at the big league level, I think that's a huge mistake. The question, DJ, and the way and the phrasing of where you're coming at and the passion of where you're coming at is you feel like Logan Gilbert is ready now. Well, if they felt that way, he would be up right now. It would be so obvious. So I guess really the anger or the frustration is in the evaluation of where these players currently are at and what's the holdup? What's the wait, right? I think that that's the big question. But for me, I'm totally fine with this. I would just rather see them move to a five-man rotation at this point in time rather than sticking to the six-man rotation and trying to make it work come hell or high water.
That's exactly how I feel about it. Like, rather than seeing Gilbert brought up too quickly, I'd rather just see them cycle through that rotation a little sooner. I'm sure that when Marco Gonzalez is out there, he's going to be a fan of that idea. They're not doing it, but I'm saying hypothetically, he didn't seem like super keen on a six-man rotation. And if you're a starter, like a regular starter in this league, and you're looking to be an ace, you wouldn't be. You'd be like, I want more starts. I want to get out there more often. And so I'm sure that he'd be a fan of it. But yeah, I don't see it going anywhere. I know the idea is that later this season, that six-man rotation, in addition to helping Sheffield, in addition to helping Dunn, will be helping Gilbert. That's quite a bit of the season, though, that you got to get through on a struggling rotation to get there. So, I mean, the hope is that you stick with it, and maybe in August, maybe in September, we're grateful that they kept it.
Number three.
How do the Seahawks avoid repeating what's happening in Green Bay right now with their quarterback?
How they avoid it, I think that there's a couple ways. One, this offseason, I do think that they made a lot of moves to the offense, right? They changed offensive coordinators. They went and got Gabe Jackson. They went and drafted Dwayne Eskridge, right? It got Gerald Everett. There's a couple of different pieces that they were able to help with the offensive side of the ball, and I think that that's very positive. That is something that you can look at. I think moving forward, though, there is this question of how much are they going to continue to lean and trust in Russell Wilson when it comes to crunch time, when things go wrong. And I think that when you look at what happened last season, I think there's two fractures of thought process. Is when Russell Wilson went on that turnover spree, right, and things were uncharacteristically going on, the decision to try to pull back on the offense versus continuing to empower and continuing to find ways to adjust and help Russell Wilson through that process, I think that those are the fractures that I would like to see connected and come together offensively for this group, so that you know, your quarterback, your offensive coordinator, your head coach, everybody feels aligned in terms of the vision and the desire of how to best win. I think that that's the best way that they can avoid repeating what's going on in Green Bay.
Two things. Number one, don't take a quarterback. Do not draft a quarterback in the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth round. Do not trade for a veteran quarterback like a Ryan Fitzpatrick kind of guy that's going to cause any kind of controversy at all. Don't do it. Step number two, have transparency with your quarterback. Those are the two big mistakes that Green Bay made with Aaron Rodgers. ESPN's Rob Domofsky was on the ESPN Daily podcast this morning and said the Packers not only drafted a quarterback in the first round, which upset Aaron Rodgers, they also didn't tell him that they were looking to draft a quarterback. So he was caught off guard. And Brian Gutekunst has even come out and said since then, I made a mistake in doing that. Like, it was not something I should have done. We should have basically told Aaron what our plan was, potentially, that we would potentially be taking a quarterback that early this year if we felt like we had the right guy. Now, Seattle has gotten Knox for potentially kind of exploring other quarterbacks, going to Josh Allen's pro day, potentially having some interest in Patrick Mahomes. There was a report that they would have taken him. Seattle also never traded up to do it. They never did what San Francisco did this past offseason. So even though they might have been eyeing those guys, they're not unique in doing that. They're an incredibly competitive ball club. There is one team in the league right now, I fully believe this, one team in the league right now that would not take a second glance at a quarterback that intrigued them, and it's Kansas City, who has the best quarterback in the NFL. So Russell Wilson, you know, as long as they keep that transparency there and as long as, you know, they maybe adjust their offense just a little bit, I wonder if we're going to be having a different conversation next offseason. So we'll see how the postseason goes for them. But first, let's talk about the state of baseball. You had another no-hitter on Friday, this one from Wade Miley. The league's strikeout rate also up. I need to ask Mike Sulk what he thinks is going on, because the Mariners aren't the only team who are struggling offensively. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Mike Salk joining us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, how are you?
Great. How are you guys?
Good. We have been talking about the Mariners, both the struggles offensively at the big league level, but then also the promising moments from some of their prospects. Jake was out at Cheney Stadium this past weekend watching Jared Kelnick. So it was a fun conversation, but to get back to the bigs and not only look at Seattle, but look around the league, there's been some weird offensive struggles combined with just, I'm going to go ahead and say, an abnormal number of no-hitters. From April 9th to May 7th, there have been four. That's not including Madison Bumgarner. What do you think's going on with some of those offensive struggles early around the MLB?
Yeah, I think you're seeing two things together at the same time that are leading to this. One, pitching's really good. it's gotten better and better over the last few years. Starting pitching is better. Relief pitching is better. You see people say that pitchers are witches or warlocks and sliders, and everybody's throwing 95-plus. I mean, just the quality of pitching, everything, the drive line and all of these, you know, everything with spin rate. The pitching's just gotten better. At the same time, combining with that is the fact that the approach to hitting has changed. It is a boom or bust risk reward proposition where launch angle and home runs are celebrated, which is fine. And ultimately there's a belief that that will lead to the best level of success, but it's going to lead to fewer hits, more walks, more strikeouts, more home runs. Well, when you swing and miss a whole lot and you don't make a lot of good solid contact and the pitchers are all getting better anyway, guess what you get? A lot more of these no hitters and low scoring baseball games. So, yeah, there's a fluky element to them that they've all come together so quickly, but I think the conditions were made very ripe for that.
Hmm. Salk, is that what's best for baseball?
No. No, God, no. No, it's what's best for each team to win, but it's not in the best interest of the 30 teams taken together. And this is, I made this point any number of times, and it's a little nuanced, so I don't want the, you know, sabermetric or whatever that you call the intelligent baseball crowd these days. Don't get mad at me. I'm not saying the stuff doesn't work. That fight is over, right? The old way of doing business of, these new stats can't tell me about heart. Like, it's not that. That fight has been won. the argument here is just whether or not it's good for the game. And I would argue very strongly it's not. The game is not as exciting. It's not as robust when it's, you know, three true outcomes and a bunch of guys throwing 95 to 100. And I think there are things they can do to try to change that. I mean, I think you can absolutely either move the mound back or lower the mound to take some of the advantage away from pitchers. I think that beyond that, I've heard some suggestion that perhaps there are things you could do with how you reward players in arbitration and start to really punish them for the number of strikeouts, because right now a strikeout is just considered like any other out. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can tweak the game, change the strike zone, maybe remove some of the high strikes that they've thrown. There's a lot of things you can do. But at the moment, baseball's yet to act.
See, Salk, this is an argument that I had with Mariners fans or just baseball fans in general last Friday about the entertainment value of baseball. Now, the winning side of it, as you point out, the sabermetrics, the analytics crowd, they have a legitimate argument to be made in terms of the approach at the plate and what's going on in baseball right now, but you're killing the entertainment value of baseball. I miss small ball. I miss strategy. I miss all those things that made the game fun. And so you talk about lowering the mound, whatever the case, putting it back, whatever the case is. You know, how about we get some singles and doubles into this? How about we get some people on base hitting the ball? I mean, those are the things that I genuinely really believe take away the legitimate entertainment factor of this sport.
Yeah, let me see if I think I might make one tweak to what you said. It's not that small ball is entertaining and that you're looking for small ball. I think what you're looking for is variety. Mm. It's not that we are out there going, everybody should bunt. Bunting is the best. Nine guys up and down the order should bunt. Nobody wants that. We're looking for variety. And by the way, that is essentially what we're looking at and for in all sports. I think basketball has very much the same problem, right? As people have crunched the numbers and determined that the two best plays in basketball are dunks and three-pointers, guess what you get in basketball? Dunks and three-pointers. Guess what's gone away? The rest of basketball. It's not as much fun to watch as it used to be, even though the teams are maximizing their potential to win. The leagues have to react to this stuff. They've got to find ways to continually allow teams to do everything in their power to win while still making sure the fan is represented in terms of the entertainment value and the variety.
Now, I know there's plenty of people that say, oh, I would, you know, outlaw the shift or I would do this. Is there anything you can actually see MLB doing?
I think they could either lower or more likely move back the mound. It doesn't have to be a lot. I mean, 6 inches could make a pretty significant difference if you moved it back an inch or so if you lowered the mound. I mean, I've heard some conversation that it could lead to more pitcher injuries. Maybe that's true, but I think at some point they're going to have to act in some way in order to take away some of the advantage pitchers have because they're just so strong. They have such, you know, such incredible command at 95 plus. They're not giving batters enough of a reaction time. I don't know how they're going to take away some of the strategy on offense and get back to the more variety. That I think is a lot more complicated.
You mentioned variety and wanting to do that. That's why I said I miss small ball, because you don't see it anymore, right? Like it is those types of things. And I also look at the shift, I think, being a very easy, hey, you don't have to move the dimensions of the field or the mound or what have you. Limit the amount of times that you can shift. I think would also add to some of that. But Salk, before we let you go, I have to get your first reaction comments to, it wasn't just a rumor that Tim Tebow might be playing football. There's a very strong belief that Tim Tebow is lined up and ready to go to be signing a one-year deal to be reuniting with Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jags. What do you make of that?
Well, he's signed up for training camp, right? Doesn't mean he makes the team. I don't know. If I had it, the
I don't know. I mean,
well, he's there.
I mean, you're putting in doubt. You're putting in doubt. 33 years old. You know, 8 seasons removed. Salk. Think he's got a chance to make it?
They say your 30s are your new 20s, Mike. So,
all I'm saying is this: if I had the number one overall pick in the draft, and he was from nearby, and he was coming to come play in Jacksonville, and I wanted to take a little of the pressure off of him, I might look for a little pressure valve relief and a little opportunity for the media and everyone else to focus on a story other than the amount of pressure that is going to be on my number one overall pick. Is Tim Tebow going to make a football difference for the Jaguars? I mean, I guess I've bet against him too many times, so who knows? Maybe he will. I guess I'd still bet against it. But could he take some of the media pressure away from Trevor Lawrence? Yeah, absolutely.
Mike, I am down for this conspiracy theory. I fully believe it now, and we can always count on you for that. So thank you.
We've got Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez back.
Don't even get me started, Casey. Mike. You knew what you would do. You knew what you would do. Don't worry, guys. We won't be talking about this, but if you want to, you can always Mac and Jack's text line. Look, Mike, we don't have time. We have to get going.
A week-long vacation.
10 minutes tomorrow on Bennifer.
Yeah.
A week-long vacation. I can't. Don't get me started. He is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike. All right, Seattle has a legitimate superstar right now in DK Metcalf, a legitimate superstar, and this past weekend proved that. We'll tell you what happened next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
I don't know if you guys have ever thought, like, I'm going to pick up this hobby and then really tried to carry it out and done something really well. For instance, last year I thought, I think I could be a painter. Like, I really think I could paint if I tried. Went out and bought a little kit and made a little picture, gave it to my mom, and then I gave up because I was not very good at it. It was boring, lost interest, and it was something I picked up last minute. Now, imagine if you were to say, oh, I want to do this, and then you picked it up and you were really good and your painting sold for like $5,000. I feel like that's the equivalent to what DK Metcalf was able to do this past weekend. As we know, DK Metcalf last week, Jake, put out a teaser video, and it was saying May 9th, and we found out eventually that he was going to try for the Olympic trials to see if he could automatically qualify. I think he'd need, what'd you say, a 10.02 or lower than that for the 100?
A 10.2 or below
to automatically qualify. He didn't automatically qualify. He was not fast enough. But he didn't miss it by much. I know that in sprinting, in the world of particularly Olympic track and field, like, it's fractions of a second are a big deal. They are a big difference, and they separate, you know, first from last place and gold medals from everything else. But it is phenomenal that at his height, at his size, Jake, he managed to finish the race in a 10.36. It is absolutely insane. And why anyone would be hating on him is beyond me. Not only that, but I think it proved the star, the superstar that the Seahawks have right now.
No, it really does. And the reason why it proves that he is such a star is he brought so much attention over the weekend to track and field, right? An event that has some of the world's best athletes, the world's best sprinters, an event, just quite honestly, that doesn't bring a lot of eyes and attention. It is not a must-see event. It became must-see, must-watch television knowing that DK Metcalf was going to be a part of it, knowing that he was going to try and qualify for the Olympic trials, it had the entire country, the sporting community, on notice. Mm-hmm. And you had, you know, NFL players from around the country. You had media members from around the country commenting, watching, you know, on DK's performance. And I think that when you look at DK, he's not just a star on the field. He is a superstar personality and somebody that I think is fun to watch, but somebody that everybody can root for, whether it's his freakish size and athleticism or whether it's just his personality in general. And one of those things that I love about it, Stacey, is his mindset. And go to cut number one here, DJ. Asked why DK, you know, even did this, here's what his response was.
What made you make the decision to drop your shoes on the track in that little video you tweeted and ultimately come out here and run against these guys today?
You know, just working out. I mean, just to test my speed up against, you know, world-class athletes like this. You know, like I said, man, just had the opportunity to come out here and run against these guys was just a blessing.
You know, I think for him, also, there's another cut of him talking about, you know, quite frankly, you know, asking about, were you afraid? Were you afraid of, you know, what people were going to say about you or your performance? And he said, I could care less, right? And in so few words, he basically said, I could care less. I know who I am. I'm confident. I wanted to give it a shot. And I wanted to come out here and see what I could do against some of the world's best athletes, the world's best sprinters. And I just love that attitude from DK.
Yeah, it's an incredibly competitive mindset, which if you're at the professional level in the NFL, if you're in the NFL, you're an incredibly competitive person. Like, to even be on the practice squad at this level, you have to be like the best from your town, the best from your high school, one of the best guys from your college. And to get through that, you've got to be insanely competitive and pushing yourself all the time. To be a superstar at that level is a whole other level of mindset, of competitiveness, of self-discipline, and that's typically rewarded when it's shown on the field with this kind of superstardom that's rare. And quite honestly, Jake, having both of us are from here, both of us have grown up watching local teams, watching local stars, he's one of those guys where I think sometimes in the corner of the country, people in the Pacific Northwest feel a little bit overlooked. I am telling you, like, the rest of the league talks about this guy, and that is rare. Not a lot of Seattle teams have had those guys. I remember the last time it happened for Seattle, outside of your quarterback, you know, the Legion of Boom. The Legion of Boom felt like the first time in a while that people were regularly talking about your team, that your team was on the front page of ESPN, was leading stories in Sports Illustrated. DK Metcalf bringing in that kind of attention, and I think should make you excited about where this team is going.
No, it is. It does make you excited about that. It does make you excited to have somebody that I think has the determination, the grit, the courage, the willingness to go and put himself out there, right? And that, those are some of the aspects that you love. And that personally, what I loved about this experience, and you know, anybody that's hating on him and his performance, I mean, I don't understand it. I don't understand why you would hate on somebody for going out and trying. And for somebody that at his size, who was predicted to not run nearly as fast as he was going to run. He runs a 10.37, just misses the cut, and had a limited amount of time training for this event. Didn't change his body, didn't do anything to that effect to try and make him a sprinter. Was just a football guy trying to compete and see if he could have his speed match up with world-class sprinters. And he held his own. And everybody else looking out there and seeing what DK did, he really surprised some people and turned heads.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners have a travel day today, but they'll begin a two-game series against the LA Dodgers tomorrow. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Let's get back to Mariners talk, figure out what's going on with this offense and how they turn things around. Aaron Goldsmith joining us next.